kind of an introduction as well as a sort of a brief dive into some of the more technical points later on. Before I start, who's used Django in some way before? Almost six people, right. Okay, well that's pretty, who's used Python before? Ah, much better, good, right. And I don't mean that in a bad way, like I said in the abstract that reading knowledge of Python is assumed, but nothing beyond that, which still sort of stands true. If you've never seen Django before, this talk will still hopefully make lots of sense. And if you've used Django before, well, hopefully the presentation will be really exciting and you might learn something. But at least initially, I'm going to have to start off assuming nobody knows anything about Django. Django is, oh, sorry, something that's already been asked, but a few people wanted it since then. The URL at the bottom of these slides is for the future, will be available after this talk. I don't want to give people too much of a preview of what I'm talking about, in case you all read it and leave. So I'll put up the slides as well as the little code example I'm doing at the end of the talk. And I'll come back to that URL too, so no need to be completely crazy, but how hard can pointystick.com be, really? So Django is a pure Python web framework, if you want to do the business card description of it. The idea is that if you're building websites, there's a lot of things you do over and over again. You need to usually somehow get data out of a database or get data from somewhere to put on the web pages. You need to have a way of creating your web pages and populating them with data, and usually you want to give it a consistent look and feel, so there's some common elements on every web page. You need to be able to process when someone makes a request of your website, you need to be able to understand the URL and get the right bits of information based on that URL. And things like that. There's a lot of stuff. Everyone who's built websites has done this sort of stuff over and over again. Django is by no means the only or the first framework to try and solve this problem. It's just yet another one. For comparison, sort of direct equivalents to Django are things like Ruby on Rails, Turbo Gears. Drupal is something that you could build with Django if you wanted to. Zope is, I guess, some sort of equivalent, although, again, the match isn't quite perfect. For those who are wondering late, don't worry, you haven't missed much. We're exactly one slide in, one word in. So Django is just another framework to do it. Why is there a mouse pointer in the middle of my screen? Django was originally written to scratch an itch by a company called Lawrence Journal World. Lawrence being a small town in Kansas, just outside Kansas City in the US. I'm not going to go into the whole history of it because I don't know it, I wasn't there at the time. And later on I've got to point to a couple of videos on Google where the actual creators are talking about the history of it. But essentially, these three guys are mostly due the credit. Top of the picture there is Adrian Holabardi, one of the original writers of Django, and off to his right is Simon Wilson, who now works for Yahoo. At the time, Simon and Adrian both worked for Lawrence Journal World and needed something to, they'd done a PHP set up to enable them to put up a bunch of the newspaper's content online, and as they slowly wanted to do more and more stuff, they found that they were just running into problems that they couldn't necessarily solve quickly. So they bit the bullet and rewrote their whole setup in Python. And initially it wasn't the idea wasn't to release this as open source software or anything, it was just something purely to scratch an internal itch. And it became useful, and Lawrence Journal World is these days, even back then, and I'm talking about, what are we up to, 2007. So mid-2004 to mid-2005 sort of time period was they were using this internally. And the website ljworld.com was becoming better and better in terms of rapidly getting content up to date, because they were having the problem that a reporter or journalist would come back to the office in the afternoon saying, okay, here's something I'm doing in tomorrow's paper, can we have something online to sort of support this? And their answer is now, no worries, sure, someone brings up an idea over lunch, it's up by the end of the day. And which they came up with the slogan, it's something for perfectionists with deadlines. They wanted to do a good job, have sensible looking URLs, validating HTML content, all the sort of tick the boxes, things you want on a good website, as well as interesting content, and by the way, we'd like it done quickly. So they came up with this product towards the end of, I'm guessing a little bit here, I think it's the end of 2004, Jacob Kaplan-Moss, who's in the bottom left of that picture there, looking like the Terminator or something, he had the opportunity to go along and work with them as well. These days, Adrian's moved back to Chicago and is working for the sort of special projects division of WashingtonPost.com. Simon's moved on to finish his one-year internship in Kansas and is now back in London working for Yahoo with the Yahoo Developer Network. And Jacob is basically the senior developer at OJWorld.com doing Django work and producing actual newspaper content there. So he sort of assumed the mantle of the key guy in Kansas. And the other two are still very heavily involved, like Adrian particularly is still basically the head maintainer of Django, comes up with most of the cool ideas and gives the blessing for anything the rest of us come up with. And on top of Django, the Lawrence guys built a CMS system, content management system called Ellington, that they now sell commercially. So they were happy to release Django, the underlying framework, and add some value add on top of this that they actually released. Like you can go to, I think it's ellingtoncms.com is their commercial product. And they sold to a few media organizations around the country. It's basically a content management system for online media sites. So managing photos, calendars, schedules, stories, obviously. And they're doing some pretty good. They've gone to the point where last year they were madly hiring extra people because Jacob and his colleagues wanted to sleep sometimes, and they were just far too busy doing their own work as well as supporting the monster they created. And these days, it's working out pretty well for them. Okay, so OJWorld.com was the original. Okay, Murphy's Law here. That's probably the only URL I didn't actually check. It's the right one. So if you get 404, we may have to quickly change that slide. I just realized I typed that in at the last minute. Forgot to click on it and check it goes to the right place. If you get something that looks like a newspaper site, I've guessed correctly. But OJWorld.com is the Kansas, is the online version of a printed newspaper. They actually got successful enough that there are portions of the online site that now get printed once a week and distributed for Lawrence citizens. Like Lawrence is apparently, like Lawrence is the place where Kansas State University is, so it's a bit of a university town. It's also got a very big music scene. Apparently people, like bands travel there who wouldn't normally play a small town like that. Lots of bars and cafes and stuff. I've only been there for about 20 minutes one morning as the train was passing through, so I can't comment on it personally, but by everything that Jacob and Adrian say, it's actually a very nice place to visit. These days, it's a big deal in the Python world. Like what, 60 odd people have turned up here to hear me talk about it. Apparently word is getting out. Every man and their dog seems to have written some log software for it. People looking to see, there's truckloads over here, by the way. You'll get your head on camera very briefly as you run across the front of the room, but that's life. Being used in a bunch of other media sites around the place, projects.washingtonpost.com, that particular URL there, projects.washingtonpost.com/congress, is a collection. They took various information from different sources about the US Congress, voting records, various vital information about congressmen, and going back for a number of historical congresses, not just the current one. And so you can look up how a particular representative voted on all the issues since they were in Congress, whether they registered a vote for, against, or were absent. And you can group it by various things, location, sex, age, whatever, even astonishingly astrological sign. So if you're interested in how did all the Scorpios vote on a particular bill, you can actually do that grouping, which is kind of a nice gimmick. You can basically do it for free, and you get a mention on a few of those sort of weird media commentary sites out of that. So it worked pretty well. There's another site that I don't actually have the URL there, but Faces of the Fallen is another thing that Washington Post have done, basically collecting information about soldiers in Iraq and grouping them by where they came from, and here's a link to obituaries, and here's a link to service records and stuff like that. Aggregation of information that's all out there, but pulling it together fairly quickly and doing a nice presentation. all of that sort of stuff in Project WashingtonPost.com is run by Django at the back end. Adrian Holabardi is sort of senior programmer there, gets to do whatever he wants in that respect. And a lot of the improvements that go into Django are for things like Adrian finds it annoying to do this, so wake up one morning and there's a new feature in Django to do something. There's a couple of online gaming sites that use Django there's an online history site and things like that are using Django. ChicagoCrime.org was probably the first non-media site using Django. Again, Adrian Holabardi designed the site. He collected, you realize you could download various police reports in Chicago, combine that with Google Maps, and suddenly you can start plotting, give a very interactive demonstration of where are various crimes being committed in Chicago, plot your route to work and look at the crimes that occurred along that route. Do I need to find another way to work? And this is Chicago, right? It's not a dull town. Right? I'm thinking of buying a house in a particular area. So it does have its juices beyond the slightly macabre. And again, it's all Django in the back end collecting information. He just goes and downloads the police reports. I think it's every day or twice a day or something, and then combines that with the Google API, and it's the regular mashup deal. Fairly popular site running today. If I get time at the end, I'll sort of go back and show you a few of these, but we've got enough to get through, and they only gave me an hour and a half today. I'm used to 3-hour tutorials at this conference, so I may run out of time. This website on the Django Projects Wiki, basically everyone's encouraged who writes a Django site and who's willing to confess to using Django in the back end is happy to put up their site there, like encouraged to put up their site. It's pages and pages of various sites. A small sample, this was Jacob Kaplan-Moss did this for OSCOM this year, basically went through back in July or August, July of last year, every site that was on that page, went and retrieved their page and combined them into a nice montage. So it's just a rough sample. Just to show you, there is more than like 3 or 4 sites. Slightly embarrassing for somebody who we can't work out who. This one here is actually the screen that Django pops up when it can't serve your request properly. There's a syntax error in their code or something. So someone got to represent the error screen. But the rest of them are up there. People who've done Django projects back at that time tend to have fun trying to find their site. I've got about 3 up there somewhere. So I keep losing them. I keep forgetting to write down where the ones are that I built. Yeah, it's just an idea. Look, there's a lot of people beyond the maintainers using this project. In fact, on the Django users mailing list, which is 2,500 odd subscribers, there's a lot of people there who are not at all interested in developing Django itself. They just want to use it. And they're using it for all sorts of creative things that you'd never have thought of, which is very encouraging for a project that's only been released as open source back in, what's now about 18 months out of the nest, open source-wise. Been through a lot of things in the last year. This was a quote that came up on Wired.com actually about a month ago, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Django reminds me a bit of the character in Airplane who always answers, what do you make of that? With question literally, I can make a hat, a roach, a pterodactyl. If you're too young to remember Airplane, it's also within a Peaky in the Brain episode at one point. But it's kind of cool, it's kind of true with Django. People keep saying it's just for media sites or just for X, Y, or Z. And then someone comes along and basically disproves that by doing something else with it. So it is true, it's not really tied to just doing a CMS or just doing a generalist site. There are some features in Django that you can sort of spot were originally made for a newspaper, but you don't have to use them if you're not doing a newspaper. Sometimes you can use them and use them in other circumstances. If you're really interested in sort of what is going on, DjangoProject.com is the main website for the project. Includes a weblog from the developers, includes a community aggregator of various people like a sort of Planet Django, includes all the documentation. Every time, all the documentation from the source tree is automatically converted to HTML and then put up on the website. So it's updated like every 15 minutes. So when we fix the documentation bug, the documentation on the website is up to date immediately. The only place we sort of fall down there is if we write a new piece of documentation, it has to actually be put into the website manually the first time. DjangoBooks.com is a site for a book that Jacob and Adrian are writing at the moment that will eventually be published through APress. And they've made it available online with a feature for people who have comments for sort of this doesn't read clearly or I don't understand this or whatever. And you can comment line by line, essentially, or paragraph by paragraph. It's the new way of doing comments these days. You don't just comment at the end of the page. You can put your comment wherever. And it's, according to Adrian, it's been enormously successful in getting them a bunch of feedback. So this is available. Hopefully people will buy lots of paper copies of it when it comes out. But at the moment, the only way to get hold of this book is in the beta version online. And it is incredibly useful, written by two of the main authors of the project, so they do know what they're talking about, and written very well. Again, for those who are madly scribbling all these URLs, I will put up the slides at the end of the up on my website so you can download them. So maybe just you have to get one URL right at the end if you want. And searching for Django on Google, by the way, is always very useful. Hey, look, searching for Django on Google. Yes, rather than me going through all of the history and how it all started, more than I have here, on video.google.com there are at least two very good Django videos. One was a talk that Jacob Kaplan-Moss gave at Google in San Francisco, or South Bay of San Francisco, when it would have been early last year, I guess, about 50 minutes or an hour or so that Google had made available on video.google.com. And he's talking there to Google engineers, and no one threw fruit or laughed at him or anything, so it was apparently a well-received talk. And a little bit earlier than that, late last year, Adrian and David Hyman Hansen, who is the main guy behind Ruby on Rails, gave a Snakes and Rubies talk to, I think it was a joint meeting of Chicago Python Users Group and Chicago Ruby Group, whatever they're called. And Adrian gave the Django side of that, talking about Django, about an hour and 20 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, I think, that talk. And both of them talk about the history as well as a bit of what Django does. So they might be two other perspectives that people want to go and have a look at some point, just to give you another view. I'm trying consciously not to repeat a lot of what they've given in those talks, because we're trying to expand the knowledge of Django, not just all give it in that time. So, brief introduction. By the way, I don't mind if anyone has questions, sing out as you go along, don't forget to save it up for the end. But now I want to move on to sort of doing something a bit more concrete. What can we actually do with Django, and how does it work? And a few ways to approach this, but let's look at it from the user's point of view. What happens when you request a web page, requesting a blog page or a newspaper page or whatever? Request goes to the server from your browser or from, doesn't have to be from a web browser, it could be from any sort of tool. Something on the server side, and this is not Django specific at all, something has to decide who's responsible for dealing with this particular incoming request. Where do I send it? Could have many websites that are under that particular host name. Once that's been decided, some function gets called to who is responsible for actually collecting the result and sending it back. Now at this point in the Django world, it's been passed off to an actual Python function who is responsible for collecting the data and sending it back. So we collect the data. Now there might be some mostly static content here, which is the common look and feel of the site. If, for example, we know we're presenting the front page of a site, so there's probably a navigation menu on the left-hand side, there's some common stuff at the top, there's some boilerplate in there to, I don't know, grab some images from Flickr and grab some Google Ads and whatnot. So that's all sort of in a template. It's a template in Django, it might be some other common construct in other languages, but it's essentially static. And then there's the dynamic bits for this particular request. Today's news stories, today's special offers, things like that. And you might get them out of a database, or you might get them from any other source. Suck them in from, in a case like Chicago crime, use Google Maps, use the police data you downloaded recently, use the input about what particular area they're viewing at the moment. Combine all that together. Put the results together, put the template and the dynamic bits together, hopefully in the right order, and then send that blob of data back to the user. Now, the data you're sending back could be an HTML page, which is sort of the common example, but there's nothing to say it has to be an HTML page. It could also be PDF or CSV or just plain text. It could be an RSS feed, so some sort of XML or pseudo XML response that you're sending back. Django actually has a syndication plugin that comes with it to enable you to easily, basically using the same code that you would use to produce your blog page output with the list of articles, instead wrap it up in the XML containers necessary to send back RSS 2 or Atom 1.0. And so there's no particular tying to HTML, although the templates are sort of, the templating language makes it easy to do HTML. But anyway, there's no content requirements there. And again, there's the request coming in need not be from a browser. It could be if you are serving back an Atom response or an RSS response, it could be coming from a feed reader. You could be doing a true REST-based website, travel booking site or something, and so the requests are coming from some other application. Again, we don't care. The things processing URLs, they're just URLs. It doesn't matter that it's a browser at the other end or not. In that list of what happens, very simplified, I have to fit it on one slide, there are sort of other bells and whistles you can get. It may be a common page. Your front page may only change every 15 minutes or twice a day or something, so no need to generate it every time. There's a caching layer that we can put in there to say, okay, this request, we've seen it before, the copy we've got is new enough, just send them back the answer we've already generated, very fast. Internationalization tends to be popular with people who don't speak English. So we have an internationalization framework that is very similar, essentially based on the GNU GetText sort of style of translation. You mark up the phrases that need to be translated, both in the templates and in the code that generates dynamic content. And it runs through a tool that produces a PO file that you can then hand off to your friendly open source translator and he sends you back something in another language. And then based on the browser's request language or on whatever other feature you may want to use to trigger the language change, we can send back translated content. So by and large, you don't have to generate separate templates for every language that you want to do. You just translate the one template and Django automatically does the substitution. Now, the overhead there is not zero. It's pretty small, but it's not zero. So it is possible to turn off, for example, the translation layer if you only are doing one language. And that one language doesn't have to be English. You may only want to be serving French content. And so you don't need to run through the whole translation layer. The return data can be compressed on the way out, speeds things up a bit. What I did put in there, we also have pretty much transparent support for things like e-tags. So this, for those who aren't maybe intimately familiar with how an HTTP request works, one of the things that goes along with the request is if you've requested this URL before, it can say, the last time I saw it, here was the e-tag you gave me back, just a little hash, a complete mess of numbers and digits. You send it back, and the server can say, wait, I've got something for that e-tag, it hasn't changed, here's the content you saw before, it's part of the caching layer, and a very fast way to send back the same information. You can also send along with your request, only send me new content if it's been modified since a particular date and time. The e-tags tend to be the most popular way to do this. Session management is built in, again, as an optional extra, but something that's very easy to integrate. There's a cookie that goes back and forth that contains a session identifier, and the session information, you can store whatever you like that you can basically pickle as a Python object in the session. The session itself is stored in the database, the session identifier goes back and forth. We've deliberately decided not to do what PHP can do, which is if you don't support cookies, it falls back to putting the session identifier in the URL. We've decided with our session plugin, it has to be in a cookie. It is completely possible to replace the session management, so if someone really wants sessions in the URL, they can do it. And in fact, right as I speak, someone is designing a cookieless version of the session plugin because they need it for embedded mobile devices or something. So there is a piece of work going on there, which is exactly what we hoped would happen. Authentication management, you must be logged in to view certain pages or not, and which includes, so there is built in a whole create a user, give them a password, they have permissions to do XYZ thing, that's reasonably built in. And last but by no means least, the admin interface, which is at the time it was a bit of an identifying feature of Django. If you create a whole bunch of data in the database, first thing you do is end up having to write a whole bunch of web pages to work with that data, enter new data, look at what's in the database. And particularly initially, imagine you're building a website very fast, and we'll again take the newspaper example. Reporter comes in and says, I've got all this information, can we put up on the website by tomorrow? Sure, no worries, didn't have a date tonight anyway. The developer starts knocking up the web pages, like web developer starts designing the web pages, backend guy starts designing the models, the database holders basically for all this information, pretty early on you want to be able to start entering the startup. It doesn't have to be a bells and whistles interface, it has to be a basic thing so that you can start entering data, delete a record if you made a mistake, change some things if you made a mistake, and so on. Django comes with a built-in way to, for every model you create, the model here being some, think of a model at the moment as a database table, an object you want to store in the database. Every one of those automatically gets a page that allows you to create new ones, delete ones, look at the list of them, sort them, filter based on different criteria and so forth. And so this makes it very easy for the reporter or whoever's sitting around with nothing much to do to start entering the data while you are still building the rest of the website to display this information. Okay. At various points here, I'm just going to stop and actually show you what Django can do rather than being a talking head. This being one of those times. Glad I put that in. I would have forgotten to do that. Let's plug this up. That's a huge size. Can everybody read that? Can I stop? So, Django comes with a little tool called Django Admin. Now, this is going to be a mistake, but let's do it anyway. That has a lot of options there, you can see. Django Admin does everything. It's Django's Swiss Army knife as far as starting up a project goes. And the good thing is that most of the tools that Django Admin can offer you are not needed for most people. If we're going to start up a little project, so starting a Django project from scratch, and there's, bear in mind, I'm simplifying a few things here. It is possible to take bits and pieces of existing Django projects and pull them together into a single site. And some terminology that I guess is important here, we tend to talk about applications in Django, which is something that may be some models, so information about what to store in a database, possibly some templates, possibly some URL controls, like these URLs are processed by these view functions. And it might just have templates, or it might just have models, or it might just have the view functions for working out how to get the data together and combine it with a template. Those tend to be called applications, or apps, because no one can spell applications up the first 7 times. And you pull a bunch of apps together into a project. There's no reason necessarily to have projects, it just makes a convenient sort of holder, particularly when you're starting out. So, and I must admit, even at my point, I still tend to start projects. So we start a project and we'll call it whatever. Now all this does creates a directory of the same name. This is going to be something that contains Python code. So a little bit of a warning at this point. It's probably useful to have your project name being something you can import into Python, which means don't use hyphens and don't use spaces. You can't. Things with hyphen and spaces are not valid module and package names in Python, so that's worth thinking about at this point. You can change it later, it's just a little fiddly. Inside that directory, it's created a couple of, again, useful things to start off with. Manage.py is basically Django admin.py that knows it's inside this particular project, so it starts by looking for things inside this directory. This means when it needs the settings file, it knows to look at this particular settings file for its configuration information. Because there are a bunch of options in Django Admin that work with your model. For example, turning the models into the database records, or validating that your models are actually correct, things like that. Manage.py is just a convenience function to say, look, work with this project. Settings.py is probably the most useful one when we first start out, contains, surprisingly enough, the settings for the project. Most of them, you don't have to touch. Like, you can eventually, but there's no need. If you just want to get up and running at an absolute basic level, there's almost nothing here. In fact, it's simple enough. I don't know what file queue is, but we'll worry about that later. The only thing I have to change here now, you can see here, you learn by doing it first. Django is a little bit agnostic about what it wants to use in the back end. Databases, you have a few choices here. PostgreSQL, MySQL, SQLite, which is SQLite, for those who don't know, is a pretty good SQL database that just runs off a single file. Very small, doesn't have things like transaction, doesn't actually check things like foreign keys, referential integrity, so you're sacrificing a few little bits, but certainly for development it's great. Because if you want to start again, you just blow away the file and start again. If you want to start again with a Postgres database or something, it's a little bit, well, you have to remember like three whole commands. So I'm going to actually use SQLite here. And even that comment is a little bit of a lie. There's in fact two different Postgres backends based on two different versions of the Python wrapper around Postgres. And there's now a pretty much working Oracle backend. They're still working on getting the SQL Server backend working perfectly, but these things are all coming along. As volunteers pop up out of the woodwork who are willing to maintain these things, we add in extra database backends. By and large, someone developing with Django doesn't have to care about the database too much. You can care about the database. If you like writing your own SQL, you can do it. But we're adopting the approach, people like to work in Python, and Python programmers don't necessarily want to have to worry about writing SQL statements and things like that. So Django makes transparent the job of storing the data in the database. You'll only have to worry about actually working with Python objects. We do need to give it a name. In the SQLite case, this is just a file that doesn't even have to exist yet. And it can have any name we like. Okay, not used with SQLite 3, not used with... you probably want to change this. We keep thinking we need to make that time zone default be empty. It only helps Adrian. America, Chicago. There's almost nothing else here I have to change. You can see here, by the way, a few of the holdovers of the original genesis of Django. One of the philosophies behind doing a highly dynamic website like this is a lot of static content, for example, images, maybe sound files. Launch Journal World actually allows you to download video clips, sound files, iCal files of where bands are appearing, drink specials from restaurants, stuff like that. All these sort of static files, there's no need necessarily to have them coming off the same server that is doing all your work producing the dynamic pages. So it allows you to easily enough set up a pointer to say, look, all my static media is over on some other URL here. And if people upload new information, it also goes over there. Secret key is necessary for the session management. Gets generated randomly each time you create a settings file. Don't need to worry. We can see here middleware classes. Middleware are these things that do all these optional extras I mentioned before. Well, we can obviously see the session management, the authentication management. The XView middleware is essentially adds some X headers, some custom headers to particular requests if they come from known URLs. And this means the processing functions can look for these particular headers and say, okay, if these headers are present, I need to do some extra information, maybe provide some more information or whatever. Common middleware provides some common stuff, surprisingly enough. It does things like you can turn on option to say, look, always add a trailing slash at the end of the URLs if it's not there. Always add www at the front if it's not there, just to make everything a bit more uniform. There's other middleware for things like the gzip compression, the etag management, some trying to mitigate some cross-scripting vulnerabilities in form submissions. towards the end, if I have time, I'll come back and show you a bunch of the other middleware pieces, but there's various options there that, again, we don't need at the start. All right, here, I want to use the admin interface, so I need to add in the admin interface. When you're starting up with Django particularly, you don't need to worry, touch the installed apps except to add the admin interface, it is optional, and then to add any of the new apps that we might create. In this case, I'm going to create a new app, cut before horse slightly here, but trust me, we're about to create a new app that we'll call Sports. And these are just Python, you can sort of see, they're just Python import paths, except they're really strings. because, again, there's a chicken and egg problem. This file gets read possibly before it's able to import these things. It wants to import them later on. But these are just, essentially, you need to be able to go import LCA2007.sports at some point and expect it to work. So we didn't have to change much there. We added the database, we added our installed application, and we changed the time zone. Yes. Now let's actually create our app, start app this time. By the way, like you're thinking, he's typing all these commands. How can you possibly remember this? In the Django source, pay no attention to the leading edge. Really, it works solidly. Actually, quite seriously, you can be running subversion copies of Django without any real risk. It works. We have all the documentation in there, and I'll just point over here to these tutorials. Maybe read overview.txt first. It's unfortunate, it's just all alphabetical here. Overview.txt is a good place to start, and then tutorials 1 through 4 are absolutely the place to start. And they literally lead you through this whole start project, start app, deal with your settings, and so forth. And this is the stuff that I was saying is automatically generated and put up on the website as well. So you can go and do the web browser I prepared earlier. All the documentation is there in actually a logical order. So, yeah, the overview, installation, and then going through the tutorial. There is actually some information in the tutorials that is possibly nowhere else in the documentation at the moment. We are trying to fix that, but it's also a very good incentive to say to people, look, spend 20 minutes, go through the tutorials. They're not optional. So back here, I went start app, it created my sports directory. And again, you don't need to even run start app. You can, as we see, it doesn't contain very much in this directory. And those files don't, init.py is empty, just necessary for import. Views.py, views are, in Django, views are the functions that actually do the processing. The URL processing works out which view function do I pass control to based on the incoming request. The view function then gets a copy of the request that is coming in, and is responsible for working out what data, what template do I need, and return the result. Views.py here, well, doesn't contain a lot, right? We can't help you too much there. Models in Django are the things that are the persistent storage. How do you spell it? We've helped you there. We've given you the import statement you need. And then from then on, you go to models. Now, this is, unfortunately, this is where a little bit of education is dangerous. Many people are used to hearing the phrase model view controller when talking about software engineering. Django doesn't quite, it sounds like we're there. We've got models, we've got views, you're waiting for controllers. Sadly, not quite. The better acronym for Django is probably MTV, models, templates, and views. Models are the persistent, the objects that get stored in databases. Now, you don't have to use the models in Django. If you want to get your data from somewhere else, or if you don't like databases and you just want to construct them yourself, you don't have to use the Django database backends. All entirely helpful. Templates are the things we'll see later on for the mostly static content I was talking about earlier. And views are the functions that they're kind of like controllers in the traditional MVC way of thinking, in that they're responsible for pulling together all the information and passing back the result. However, some of the controller responsibility is also given to the URL processing that initially happens when a request comes in. So MVC doesn't quite map onto Django neatly. MTV works pretty well as an acronym. So that's all we needed to start up our project. At this point, we're ready to start coding, if only we knew what we could do there. So back to the amazing slides. Now, before I talked about things in terms of request comes in from browser, XYZ happens. Probably not the clearest way to explain things when I'm actually showing you code. So I'm going to start deep in the internals with the here's the data that here's the objects that we're going to store in the database and are going to change from request to request. And for this case, I'm just using a hypothetical sports tournament of some description. All we know is it has home and away matches and it has scores and players who have names and cities. So you sit down, you think a bit, what are my models going to be here? What are my objects that are playing around at this point? We have our players, and then we have matches between players. So matches later on are going to be something that somehow link two players together and maybe record their score. Django has a bunch of classes for specifying what type of model, what type of field you have in the model. Python being loosely typed, there's no way to explicitly say this attribute in a class is a string or this attribute is an integer. We have to tell it explicitly. This is important because we're about to put these things into a database and the database really, really wants to know what type it is. So we say here, okay, name is a character field, city is a character field. There's integer fields, date fields. There are, a lot of fields. There's actually, again, one of the documentation files lists all of the fields that we have. So I'm just using a couple of very simple fields here. The inner class you see here, the admin inner class, basically says in the admin interface, which I'll show you in a minute, here are the particular fields to display. In this case, both of them. But you may have some fields that you don't want to display. This is for human consumption and what they can enter. And the str method is when I print out an instance of this model, what I want to display. In this case, print out the name. We're just going to take a 2-minute break here while the AV people change their DVD.
Yes.
Right, time starts now.